There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Hey, what's up, everyone? How are you? Ben Kissel here. Henry Zebrowski is over there. Beautiful man drum. All right.
I am so sick of wearing clothes.
I noticed.
While performing.
We've recorded a couple of times today. No shirt, Henry Zebrowski.
Yeah, man, because I'm get slick and I like to feel the weird little kisses of sweat. Is it weird to say that? Because I get like,
yeah.
Do you have this? Also, first of all,
We have Marcus Parks with us.
Hello. How are both of you?
Pretty good, Marcus. Marcus, don't be so thrilled to be here on Side Stories.
He joined us. But listen, do you not have this? All right, I have a thing that when I'm working out or something, or like I'm, especially now that I'm doing planks, hold your applause.
The anti-workout workout.
I get like one singular bead of sweat from the back of my armpit that comes all the way down. Do you get that? Do you get one bead?
I think I have multiple beads, a lot of pores. It might be a problem.
Marcus?
No, I don't sweat very much.
Marcus is not a sweater.
But you wear several shirts. How do you even know if you're a sweater?
I would feel it. I would feel wet on my back.
So you don't have like pit stains? You don't have any of that?
Not really.
Are we talking sweat all the whole
is
show?
Is this why you guys asked me four times to come on Side Stories this week is to talk about your back sweat?
Well, no, I had specific things. First of all, before we start with stories,
okay.
All right, number one, moment of vulnerability.
Uh-oh.
We're starting with these now. Kissel last week admitted to a fear of failure.
Sure.
I said I work too hard. That's my biggest problem. My other biggest flaw.
I care too much.
Okay.
See,
wow. Well, I was the only one that answered that question, honestly. So I guess I'll be paying for that for the rest of my life.
That's what it is. Okay. And the second thing is that there was a couple of things I wanted to talk about Kuklinski because we didn't get to talk about it while we were recording the episode. And there were a couple of questions I had.
Okay.
Number one is, they were broached to me by the audience, and I figured that, I mean, we should at least give them what they want because they want to talk about it.
Sure.
Straight up, the biggest issue that seemed to come out of Richard Kuklinski, besides whether or not did he not kill anybody, which is like, we have already stated our beliefs.
Well, he definitely killed a lot of people.
We've already stated that we believe that he probably killed like 50 people.
Do some people think he didn't kill anyone?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, how is that possible?
The five people he went to jail for killing.
Oh, okay. Well, that doesn't make much sense. He's a hitman.
Yeah.
It's in the whole job description. You got to kill.
But there are some people who say that all that was fake, but I think he knew too much about the ins and outs and like the nuts and bolts of being a hitman in order to not be telling the truth about some things.
Okay. And there's also the fact that his descriptions of the cold cases that they went and cleared out after he did his interviews, like he matched down to the caliber of weapon he used because
right.
he remembered like, yeah, I used a 38 on this guy, used a different a 22 on this guy. And the cops that went and checked it out, like, yeah, he named the location, the time, and the caliber of weapon used on these people.
Kuklinski, the mind, he's got a lockbox for a brain.
Yeah,
what goes in does not come out.
To say that this guy, like, you know, that he was not a hitman, I think it's all this like weird mob apologist thing that doesn't make any sense to me. I was thinking about this in the shower today.
Whoa. That's where a lot of people do their best thinking.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. No, I was thinking about like the mob apologist thing and how like people make heroes out of these guys. It's like organized crime is responsible for more misery amongst the human population than every fucking serial killer put together.
Occasionally you get a free pair of sneakers on Christmas, though. And that's really
nice. When they boosted that whole truckload of the Tickle Me Elmos and gave it to the entire neighborhood, that was a nice moment.
Honestly,
nice
that is like straight out of Billy Madison. Like, who would steal 500 Tickle Me Elmos and just cut to the mobsters just laughing and tickling Elmo?
Oh, yeah. I mean, how do you think the opioid crisis exists in America? It would not exist without organized crime. You know,
absolutely.
Human trafficking does not exist without organized crime. All of this shit.
It's not even just apologists. It's also the other side where people forget that they are actually very capable and dangerous.
Yes.
And we talked about it on the show, they've been marginalized on television as like funny, fat goofballs, but actually at one point they were very dangerous. But all of this aside, straight up, Uh-oh. Who would win in a fight, Richard Kuklinski or Carl Panzram?
Panzram.
They were against each other. Yeah, I see, Panzram.
Well, Kuklinski, immediately Panzram.
Well, yeah, Kuklinski was more of a, he fired a lot of guns.
He was an assassin.
He had a blowtorch.
Yeah, he was an assassin. We're talking one-on-one, like, bull ring. These two dudes are just sent out there, and they have to, like, grapple.
Can we do Roman Coliseum style, where you can throw a couple of weapons into the ring, though?
I think that it's more Staten Island Coliseum style, where it's a gigantic, it's spaghetti. It's just like, it's just a pile of spaghetti. They have to see how they have to stay on balance in a big pile of spaghetti.
Well,
and
that's
a bunch
just
of people
sort of a
yelling and throwing New Jersey Nets, like stuff, like memorabilia at them and the Devils.
Yes, maybe some Vince Carter jerseys or something. So that's kind of like a mud wrestling, like an Italian mud wrestling ring.
Yeah, Italian mud wrestling.
Spaghetti.
Yes.
Okay.
It's Italian. All right.
I don't necessarily want to see them all lathered up in marinara sauce attempting to wrestle each other, but that's all right.
Then you'd need to take your producer hat off, obviously, because you are not being a correct producer. That's exactly what they need to be. They need to be covered, slathered in sauce, so they can't tell what's blood and what's sauce.
Oh, that's a good
point. But for me, in the end, it's like, again, want to give people a good show. It's Kuklinski right when he's decided to go back into contract killing, right? That's probably him at his physical peak. In terms of him, he's still young and spry. You know, he hadn't gotten gnocchi ankles yet, which eventually settles in. Like, he doesn't get that living high on the hog, like, week of joint. Carl Panzram, right after getting out of prison, after...
the first time?
What was it?
When he escaped?
Once he was done carrying the baby.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. If you want to go for toughest Panzram, I would say Africa Panzram is toughest Panzram.
Ooh, like that's Panzram is tough-ass Panzram.
Yeah, that is super tough Panzram.
Super sharp.
Yeah, and possibly if you want to talk about, like, if you want to talk about Kuklinski's toughest time, we didn't talk about this on the episode, but there was a period of time where Kuklinski had kind of a rule where he would only beat guys to death in his garage.
Yeah, he would only do that.
He would, like, he said he beat 50, I think it was 12 or 15 men to death. Like, he'd take them back to his garage, the one that he got after him and Robert Prongay became friends.
Okay.
He took them back to the garage and he would start, you know, of course he would tie them up and then he'd just beat them to death with either his fists or with big iron rods. And sometimes he said that he had this big 15-inch screwdriver.
Uh-oh.
And he'd take it and he'd stab the guys in the spine and shatter their spine and essentially paralyze them so he wouldn't have to fucking tie them up anymore where they couldn't move at all.
It's an unfair fight.
And then he would beat them to death.
Wow. Well, I guess he got so bored with killing, he had to be creative with it.
Well, he said,
not a good sign.
Or did he say, like, I guess I was just taking out all my anger on the world.
I guess so. I don't know.
You know what it's like? Kissel, maybe you wouldn't understand because you're not much of a home cook, but sometimes I don't want to buy pesto. Like, sometimes, like, I want it because I like my pesto a little bit, like, stankier. Like, I always double the garlic.
Oof.
And I double the nut.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Because you want it, you got pinoli nuts and some fresh basil, if you can get it, because then it goes bad in a second.
What does this have to do with Kuklinski jamming a screwdriver in someone's spinal cord?
Sometimes you want to be the change you want to see in the world. Sometimes you want to see the effort
applicable.
You put in come out.
Like,
if you put in shit, you get shit. Sometimes you really just want to wail on a guy and see what he does.
Yeah, he said he had a power washer in there to wash off all of the walls and the ceilings and the floors.
Yikes.
Woof.
All right. Well,
that's the main reason why I even wanted to have you on the episode so we could talk about it. Because it's fun to it's going into the world of imagination. Because I know, like, deathmatch isn't around anymore. And there's a lot of, you know, it's like one of those things where it's kind of fun to spell it out. And we know just enough that I think that we could tell the story a little bit. And I do think that Carl Panzram would sit on fucking Kuklinski's chest and bash his head into the ground until it was just a bunch of fucking just sauce.
Now I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, Kuklinski's thing is that his entire philosophy when it came to fighting was hit first and hit fast. Like, hit first, hit fast, hit hard.
Oh, all right. You know?
Yeah.
But if these two guys are squaring up in a ring, like, Kuklinski doesn't have that element of surprise. He's a very large large man. Yes. And he's very strong.
Well,
yes. And he does move like a cat. Yes. But I don't know if that ever, I don't know if that makes him a good brawler. Like Panzram, because I think Panzram would be good in any situation.
Well, now, honestly, though, with the Looney Tunes tactics, with the Bugs Bunny moves, Kuklinski in a dress, Panzram starved. You know, perhaps Panzram is won over by the beautiful Kuklinski.
See, now you're thinking like a producer. Mm-hmm. What we do is Kuklinski gets to choose the place where they fight. He gets to choose. It's his home ground. So basically, it's Panzram is the away team at Kuklinski's house. But I still think Panzram makes it, and mostly just because he's got that lover's grip. And it's a thing that Kuklinski doesn't understand, is that he can get, once he gets Kuklinski by the hips.
Ooh.
I don't know. I heard Kuklinski had quite a strong grip himself. And then again, he's throwing down all those, as we joked about, those dark circles to make it look like you can go through the wall and stuff. And what if it worked? Then he's teleporting like, what's a Sub-Zero or something?
Yeah, I forget. Scorpion. That would be Scorpion. Okay. Yeah. Raiden and Kung Lao were also able to use teleportation technique.
Nice.
What are you doing in this? What are you doing pre-teleport?
This is the part of where he's sullying our show with his video game out.
Well, also, look, okay, let's bring this down to classes, okay? Like, let's think about, like, Panzram, warrior class.
Sure.
He's a balanced warrior.
I would call him close to maybe a mage, but not a healing mage.
No. I don't even know what a mage is.
Because I think he's smarter
than you think he's more of a pyromancer.
No, he's not a distance hitter. He's a brawler. I guess he's a bruiser.
Yeah.
It is bruiser versus bruiser.
Well, I think he's a war. I mean, well, for me, there's two different types. There's like, there's the balanced warrior, and then
like
there's
Leonardo.
The tank.
Oh,
like, and that's what, like, if you think about like Borderlands 2, like, there's like, okay, neither one of you
played
it.
I played it. I played it.
I watched you play it.
I get lost. I got lost in it, so I don't know what to do.
Well, like, Panzram is like the balanced soldier character, and Kuklinski is the gigantic guy that is able to wield two guns at one time.
It could go either way.
They have different skill sets, but Panzram is balanced. So if you get Kuklinski in the right environment or give him the right weapons, then he might be able to take Panzram down. But I think Panzram has the balanced skill set in order to take down, I would say, anybody in the serial killing world.
All right,
Panzram is easily, I think, for me, it would be a good fight between Kuklinski and Panzram, but Panzram takes it, and he comes up. He's bloodied. He's definitely bloodied.
I'm gonna put this in the simulation machine. I'm gonna run it 100 times. Beep, boop, 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 boop. Okay, what's the conclusion? They fell in love. Can you believe it? They ended up actually falling in love.
I do think Panzram would get. I mean, Panzram would have probably a little bit of like a crush on Kuklinski just because he's fun and because they both hate the world the same amount.
Honestly, I think they would be friends in a strange way.
But I think Panzram is less friendly than Kuklinski. I think Panzram would say Kuklinski, you're always joking around. This is like Kuklinski saying he should have been a stand-up comedian or something like that. Yeah.
The nice man.
Yeah. What is that? Yeah, the quote we didn't say, and that was from the book is that Carlos talking to him and Tom's like, wow, like Panzram, like you're a really funny guy. And Panzram said like, yeah, and go out on stage and say, I got 1,000 jokes that'll kill you. And if they don't, I will.
Good work. Check, please. Oh, my God. And then what, he wanted to be called the nice man.
Yeah,
right?
Well, that was after he got put on medication, after he got put on Ativan and Paxil. And that's just like, I'd rather be known as the nice man.
The nice man.
Funny guy.
What a really good ad for Paxil.
It really is. I think Paxil could have saved all of these people's lives. If he was on that during his everyday life, maybe it would have been good for him.
I mean, really, like, we did three long episodes, but there were still so many, like, Kuklinski moments that I loved that I wish we could have found a way to put in there. Like, one of them from the, it was from the Iceman and the Psychiatrist documentary, I think. Yeah, it was. Kuklinski and the psychiatrist are talking, and Kuklinski's telling this story about how he murdered a guy, and, you know, he murdered him the wrong way, and he got all this blood all over, got all these blood all over all his clothes. Oh. And he had to like drive home like, wait, he's like, yeah, and I had to drive home naked. I was wearing a bed sheet. Can you believe that?
Yeah,
and,
the guy's
and
like,
him and the other guy like, yeah. And then like Clint's like his face drops. He's like, we're having too much fun right now.
Yeah. Like, oh, I murdered him wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's like, wait, we're having too much fun. He's like, yeah, people are going to watch this and they're going to think that, you know,
I'm a nice guy. That whole thing where he's like, they could think I'm a nice guy.
Oh, he was concerned. Kuklinski was worried that he was going to come across as too charming.
Yeah, he was completely concerned. He's like, yeah, they're going to think I'm a nice guy. But, you know, but that's the thing is when people get to know me, they tend to hit a stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're Richard Kuklinski.
A dead stop.
Oh my God, I can't. That's the worst crime he's committed so far. The crime of killing comedy. Wow.
Yeah, there's so many. And they're like, we never got to cover the tranquilizer gun.
Forgot. That's what I also wanted to bring up, was that he had a period of time where he learned it from watching nature documentaries and cartoons again.
Wild
and he put
Kingdom.
Them together.
Yeah.
And he started getting tranquilizer darts. And he would use a blowgun. And he did it one time where he hit a guy with a blowgun. And the guy's like, like that Will Ferrell movie, and then he goes over and he just shoots him in the head.
Well, he's that's doing blow darts.
That was how he impressed Prange, because the first time, because they actually had like a couple
that's right.
of dates.
They went out and had a date.
Yeah, they had a date where like Prange showed him like, and Prange showed him like, yeah, this is how you kill a guy with a grenade. And Kuklinski was like, not bad, not bad. This is how I do it. And then he got the tranquilizer gun.
And Prange's like, you gotta be kidding me.
Oh my God.
This is so, because they were just constantly like, dude, that is so cool. Like, it really is like Henry made the joke. Is that like, do we just become best friends? Like,
do we just become best friends?
Like, that's pretty much, like, it really is. It reminded me of like when, you know, you're like 14 or 15 and like you make a friend that has the same interest as you for the first time.
Yeah,
and
blow like, darts and grenades.
And you're like, oh my God, this is like, can we just like, I don't know, hang out forever? Like, yeah, dude, we should totally hang out forever.
Honestly, if you're 14 years old, that's a very fun conversation to have.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, him and Prange, their whole friendship was pretty ridiculous, man.
Well, it's that's a movie I would watch.
And because I will say, in the divisive world we live in right now, it's so nice that two people could come across the aisle and work together.
Yep.
That's what's really important. That's what we're missing right now, is a true understanding of each other.
And ice cream. More ice cream.
More ice cream.
Prange's ice cream.
And we also didn't.
We gotta,
and we didn't
we
talk.
We got to thin us out, man. We got to get thinner.
No, no.
And we also didn't talk about the fact that Chris Evans played Robert Prange in The Iceman.
The Captain America?
The worst decision in the world.
Yes. Yeah, Captain America played Prange?
Captain America played
Prange. No, he's not an ice cream salesman. Yeah. Why does everyone have to be so beautiful?
They just, what they did, they uglied him up by giving him like a long hair wig, and he wore aviator sunglasses. And they're like, oh, yeah, now that, yes, he's supposed to be ugly now.
That's amazing.
But, and you know who was supposed to play Robert Prange?
Who?
James Franco.
James Franco? But then, what is going on?
But then he wasn't able to commit to, like, the full part, so he was in a scene. He got murdered by Kuklinski. He was the guy, remember that was that story that Kuklinski told that, like he was saying, like, please God, and he's like, you know what, I'll make you a deal. You ask God, I'll give you 30 minutes. And if God comes down and saves you, then I won't kill you.
Well, it's
and
more of a theoretical belief. I didn't actually come down like that.
Yeah, and he said that was the only murder he regretted. He's like, I shouldn't have done that. That was cruel. I shouldn't have done that.
It was kind of cruel, yeah. Mr. Kuklinski.
And James Franco played that guy in the movie.
I see. Everyone is too handsome.
Yeah.
I hate it. Prange should be ugly. Kuklinski
honestly,
should be hideous.
It's an incredible character. And the idea of having just somebody who's just this, like, face dude do it makes no sense. It's like you had so many opportunities. You had Michael Shannon!
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And you fucked it up.
Well, someone did DM me on Instagram. Kevin Nash, the old professional wrestler, looks just like Kuklinski.
Holy shit.
He could play him if he can play him. I don't
Kevin
know.
Kevin Nash,
but he could.
Again, too good looking because, like, I mean, Richard Kuklinski like he had the Polish piggy look for a really long time.
No, he maybe he's Polish born with it. Maybe he's Polish. Look. Dignitary?
That is a dignitary look. That is a distinguished way for a Polish man to be. To be over 6 feet tall? He was very important to the Polish people. He could have been mayor of Warsaw if he showed up.
No, he had a Porky Pig head. He had that, big bald head, the kind of piggish nose.
Yeah, man, he's Polish.
Yeah.
Yeah, buddy, you're talking about the... You are racist against my people. Those are the attributes of my people. We got thick hands. Uh-huh. Look how thick my hands are.
Yeah, they're pretty thick.
They're not big, right. They're thick.
Huh. No one cares about your weird Polish body anymore. Polish Pride Month is over for Last Podcast Network.
You know what? I absolutely agree. I think now you're not allowed to have your Polish moment. No more Polish moments.
I'm allowed to have my Polish moment forever. It's actually showed me how dangerous and capable the Polish people are. That's a thing we should look up to and consider when we consider... Polish people.
To continue with the Porky Pig analogy, that's all, folks, on Kuklinski. Let's do a news story.
All right.
My goodness. Unless there's something that comes to your head that you say, oh, I really wanted to have the audience hear that, then feel free to spit it out. Now, I don't know if this story really belongs on this show or not, but I thought it was interesting. In Paris, they just rolled out the sidewalk urinals. Evidently, they're called the Eurotrotter, which is very bizarre. I guess they were having a problem.
It's not Eurotrotter.
I don't know.
It's not the
Eurotrotter. That's what it is.
It's pronounced Eurotrotter because it's like abattoir.
Yeah.
Eurotrotter. apparently public urination is a problem in France. In Paris specifically, they're drinking the vino, they're eating the cheese, and I guess they're just going to the bathroom on the streets. So they put up all of these things that look like mailboxes, and there's just a photo of a dude taking a pee in one, and I gotta say, very uncomfortable, kind of strange. I don't think it's gonna solve the problem. As a matter of fact, it just kind of legalizes the problem.
You know what? I'm for it. I'm down for it.
Public urinals.
Absolutely.
Really?
Just fix it. You know what it comes down to? Where we're sitting here worried about everybody's feelings about this, and they're worried about it shows that men can't control themselves, and it's not going to fix the problem. Be like, but guess what, man? Do I not have to smell your piss anymore?
Yeah.
Great.
I don't know.
This fucking mailbox now. What you do now.
How can't you hold it?
To make it a block without pissing your pants, you need to just fucking go.
Every single one of us on this show have all dropped trowel here in New York City and taken a piss on the street.
Oh my God, we were driving from Phoenix to California. We saw this one guy on the side of the highway. He was dressed like Lawrence of Arabia for some reason.
Well, yeah,
he'd drive behind a cactus.
Because it was like 115 degrees. So he had to go out and he put on a Lawrence of Arabia headdress. Dress to
He's
walk out of his
now.
Car.
He was doing his shit squat like out to the desert.
All of the kids in the car were embarrassed that he's their father.
Oh, it's not just men who piss outside either.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah. Jackie Zabrowski has pissed on my feet before.
Hey, there we go.
That is different.
Maybe the Eurotrotter would help. By the way, Eurotrotter, it combines the words urinal and pavement. So it's a pavement urinal. And these are all over. I just don't think it's going to really work out. And there's one very near the Notre Dame Cathedral.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, keeps them from pissing on the church.
Yeah.
But there's places you can go into.
But guess what?
Don't they have Starbucks?
Guess what, man? I would fucking save my piss for that church. Because that's what you do. I would see the abattoir. And I'd be like, and then sklish, sklish, sklish. And all of a sudden there'd be this three priests standing there going like, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like merci, Mr. Zabrowski.
You want an Ozzy Osbourne at the Alamo moment?
I do.
Okay.
Mm. Right. Ooh, you could get banned from Paris.
Ooh, that's such a good tour name for 2020. Last Podcast Is Left, banned from Paris.
Yeah. We'll have to do a show in Paris, though. That would be fun.
That would be fun. I'd enjoy that.
The French authorities say they're using this surprising solution to supplement existing toilets in heavily congested areas where the urine issues. This is a quote. The interest of this new urban fixture lies in its mobility, ease of installation, and use, as well as its ecological dimension. I think it's disgusting.
I think it's great. I think it's a wonderful idea.
they could do whatever the fuck it is they want over there. What I do like is when you see the picture of the man using the urethrotois.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a man they just found or that was a man that they saw because he looks guilty. You could see him hiding his face from the camera as he's pissing.
Who could do it? Yeah. I mean, the stage fright alone, I could. There's no way.
Do they have like a little planner on top of that? I'm looking at the picture and it looks like they have like dirt on top.
So you could put out your cigarette.
Oh.
Well, that's kind of fun.
Because you know how it is. That's how many times I remember back in the day when you could smoke in a bar. Mm-hmm. And it was always weird to be like smoking in the bathroom as you're taking a piss. And the cigarette smoke is just like going in your eyes. And you're just like, dude, you're just doing the one lip thing where you leave the whole cigarette in your mouth for like 3 minutes and just.
Uh-oh.
I miss that so much.
You missed that aspect of it?
I miss that so much.
Smoking and peeing?
Oh, man.
The Marcus Park story?
It's just good memories from college.
Of course.
Just good memories of getting fucking wasted at Bash Rip Rocks at 4 p.m. in the afternoon.
Oh.
And just going to the bathroom, puffing on the cigarette because, you're in there for 6 hours and you gotta smoke at least 2.5 packs of cigarettes
while
you're there.
And then all of a sudden you start hearing a tapping from the urinal. You know, Larry Craig is in there and you're just like, I'll replace this cigarette with.
He's now in a new kind of like he figured out a contraption where he could hang his suspenders on the side of the urinal so it suspends his body so he can really extend his legs out to the side. I miss smoking inside.
Absolutely.
But actually, my favorite bar in Atlanta is now actually as of September 1st, so they're no longer doing smoking inside at the Yacht Club, which makes me honestly both nostalgic and also happy for them because it's about time for it to change.
Yes, we got to save our lungs. We got to save our lives. We got to save the future.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, there's a couple of alien stories we have to get to. But Henry, you got a tale you would like to tell?
There was this one. I mean, honestly, what I like about this show is it's mostly you have an opportunity to go look this stuff up. It's a very interesting video about a man named Calvin Parker Jr. And him and his buddy Charles Hickson were both abducted by aliens when I guess is in 1973. And this is a man that kept this very quiet for a long time. When he first came out about it and said that I was abducted, he was obviously ridiculed. He did a couple of television shows as a young man, as Calvin Parker.
Okay.
And it eventually kind of ruined his whole life. So he decided to just kind of put it all away. And so eventually it just got to a point where the story was haunting him so bad they need to come out, and he recently wrote a self-published book called Pascagoula, The Closest Encounter, My Story, by cool. Calvin Parker.
And it happened Pascagoula?
I guess it's Pascagoula?
Yeah, it's Pascagoula, Mississippi.
Oh,
actually, we showed a video of this guy at one of our live shows long, long ago.
It was a very interesting creature too, because it said it was three legless creatures. They floated from the craft that they saw as him and his buddy were fishing, which translates to drinking beer.
Yes, of course.
Throwing back some suds.
You got to. Buddy. You're fishing.
I'm actually going to start taking up fishing. I'm really into it.
Yeah, you can't call it drinking beer, avoiding the family because the in-laws are in town. You just call it fishing.
Fishing.
It's fishing. Yeah. So these three legless creatures floated from the craft. One had no neck with gray, wrinkled skin. The other had a neck and appeared to be more feminine. Parker described their hands as being shaped like mittens or crab claws. And one of the creatures put one of its claws around his arm. Parker said that he was terrified, but then another feeling came over his body.
Uh-oh.
I think they injected us with something to calm us down. I was kind of numb and went along with the program.
Parker said the creatures floated he and Hickson into the craft and performed physical examinations on the two. Then they were taken back to the bank of the river. Parker said he didn't want to tell anyone that happened, but Hickson convinced him otherwise. The two contacted Keesler Air Force Base and were told that they should call local authorities. So they contacted the Jackson County Sheriff's Office. So they went and did investigate it.
Right. Interesting. But maybe these aliens were on their own fishing trip trying to avoid their own family and getting hammered off of alien booze.
Could be.
That would be awesome. And then they caught two big old screaming pink ones. Every time. Oh, we got to throw these back.
So is that his main story?
That is his main story. And it's very interesting. You should watch this interview with him. And then the book is, it's a self-published alien book. So if you want to just do that, I mean, I've read countless numbers of them. And they are fun to do because you get a peer inside of the way Calvin Parker thinks of himself, which I'm going to say immediately, he's the hero.
All right, how credible are we talking here? We got who's the most credible person on earth? That would be Mr. Rogers. I just rewatched that documentary last night. Won't You Be My Neighbor? And then the biggest liar of all time. Ooh, who do you think is the biggest, greatest liar ever? Houdini. I'm sick of him calling it magic. It's lies.
It's not lies.
Houdini was a liar.
Houdini was an illusionist.
No, and also Houdini was actually one of the greatest truth tellers of his time, because right. Houdini used to go through and like he was really against like the spiritualism. Whole spiritualism trend at the time, because he was very close to his mother, and he felt that he had been tricked by a couple of spiritualists by telling him, like, oh, your mother is speaking with you from the other side. So he used to go out and like flip tables over. He's like Jesus with the money lenders.
Ooh.
Yeah. He'd like flip tables over. And tell
now you just got schooled, Kissel.
Yeah,
I guess so.
That's
why
we have Marcus on here. You
hey man, I'm just saying.
If you want to go,
magicians are they can be liars too.
Go for Chris Angel then.
Chris Angel, fine.
Because Harry Houdini is a wonderful man.
All right,
I am going to be put to the coals for possibly defending Chris Angel, but again, Chris Angel is in the realm of illusionist. So what he says is that lies. It's a part of his act. I'm not going to say he's a liar. I will not say that that's the ultimate liar. I think the ultimate liar is got to be Jenny Craig. Because she's making you lie to yourself. Those meals are not
going to
fill you
up. No, they're not going to. All right. So Jenny Craig to Mr. Rogers. This guy is somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Perfect answer. All right. Well, he mentioned.
And also another fun fact. John Travolta was supposed to play Forrest Gump, but he turned the role down.
What? He turned it down. Thank God he turned it down.
Did you just think of that because I said the word Jenny?
Jeez.
I think that this man, after 45 years of being completely silent about it, if he decides to come back out now, like I think everyone always uses the excuse that abductees, you know, they're just raking in the money.
Oh, I don't
think
so.
And it's just like, have you ever met an abductee? They live, I'm going to say, we're talking the most studio apartment.
Yeah,
that's
maybe.
Like the most that them that they are in alone.
Well,
because everybody else has left them.
We have a candidate running for office who claims that she was abducted. And also this week, a NASA astronaut said that he spotted an alien-like organic object, and he described it as very curvy. It was curved and organic-looking. This dude's name is Leland Melvin, and he seems to be fairly credible. We're talking astronaut here. Melvin, the astronaut, he played college football at the University of Richmond and was drafted to the Detroit Lions in 1985, so he's very buff and strong. And then he went on to
say, do you think he's the only Detroit Lion to ever be abducted by aliens? Do you think Barry Sanders was ever abducted by aliens?
Barry Sanders might be an alien. Yes, it's possible. So before he became an astronaut, he played for the Lions, and then he continued to say, Houston, we have a problem, but he did not want to be an alarmist, and that was regarding the alien. He said, Houston, we have a problem. He really said that.
Oh, wow.
When he saw an alien.
Wow.
I thought that was just in the movies.
That's from the movie, though. He took that from the movie.
I think he'd been waiting for a really long time for an excuse to say, Houston, we have a problem. Mm-hmm. And I think seeing an alien is a pretty good excuse to say, Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
This guy.
Yeah, they said something being like, I don't think, was that the direct line they even said? Because Houston, we have a problem, I don't think is the real quote.
It is the real quote.
History.
It is absolutely, well, I don't, not from history. It's a real quote from the movie.
Yeah, from the movie. Yeah.
What was that, Apollo 13?
Apollo 13, yeah.
Yeah.
Great movie. Real fun to watch.
Great movie. They can't hear
it's
you.
It's a great movie.
So this is according to Ligel Watson, author of UFOs of the First World. This is what he says. Now, I think he's a bit of a skeptic here, but let's find out. He says, I think Leland is winding up alien fans, and as suggested, it was probably an ice formation he saw. So now we have a UFO guy saying, no, it was an ice formation. And then he goes on to tell the Daily Mail, fortunately, he didn't test his explanation by going too close to it. Otherwise, it might have shot upwards to cling to his face, and we all know what happens next. I think he's mocking him.
He is mocking him. He is mocking him, and it's a thing I've grown accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a thick skin to being abused for believing in this information.
The line originally was, Houston, we've had a problem.
Interesting.
Ooh, weird. It sounds like you had sex with a man named Problem.
Hmm.
All of this gets me. I mean, it's interesting about how alien abductions can be sort of manipulated, because I do believe these people experience trauma. That's a part of the reason why they talk about it. It's the reason why they come out and they disclose that they've been abducted. I think a lot of times, yes, maybe it is what they now say it's like a screen memory for other abuse. Mm-hmm. But I mean, something happened for you to be so hysterical these, like, honestly, years afterwards.
Well, going back to what Henry was talking about earlier, let's go to the wonderful state of Florida. Bettina Rodriguez Aguilera, she was just, now this is the woman who claims she was abducted by aliens. She's a Republican, and she was just endorsed by the Miami Herald. So if this is her grand plot to get political attention, that Miami Herald ain't no joke. She seems to be doing good.
Yeah.
Honestly, if she had got, because that's a big time newspaper, right?
Oh, absolutely. She told the Miami Herald that these aliens have communicated with her multiple times throughout her life. She says the aliens took her into their spaceship and spoke to her about events that would happen. Rodriguez Aguilera said she also spoke. She's also spoken about these supposed events with several Spanish language news outlets. We realize that Rodriguez Aguilera is an unusual candidate. That's what the Miami Herald said. But they say it's endorsement of her. They say they endorse her and that it agrees with Rodriguez Aguilera that her experiences are a non-issue. So it seems like it could work out.
Looks like she got abducted by some Nordics.
Really?
Yes, that her sounded like Nordics.
Woman with long blonde hair.
Really? Yeah,
Nordic ones are always like, Nordics are always the sexy ones.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it was some kind of big, they're always like busty, redhead, blonde ones, and just, woo.
Are we now living in a time where if you are abducted, you're no longer demonized, you're no longer criticized? We had that one dude on who was a very, not the best politician, but he was the one who believes in the Bigfoot, or Sasquatch, I believe.
And yeah, but they did
that
the same.
That seemed to humanize him.
Yeah, it does weirdly humanize them, and then they flip it. It's also strange how people are, like, leaning in, but it's like, but these are political candidates that seem to be fine. It does not sound like the normal day-to-day candidate. This Mississippi man is still being ridiculed for his beliefs.
I mean, what do you think? I think that this could drive people to the polls for this gal.
Yeah, quite possibly, maybe. At least ironically, at least.
Yeah, why wouldn't you want to do
that? That's a problem. We're at because of stupid irony.
No, yeah. Don't you
because
want
of irony? But yeah, because it, yeah, 4chaners loved irony so much that they started eating it for breakfast. Ugh. We're already there.
I know. Stop. We're already there. But if we're talking, what is this? Wasn't there some treaty supposedly Eisenhower signed with the Greys?
Yeah, the treaty in 1954.
So don't we want a politician in there that has direct contact to the aliens? She's on the ground floor.
They're lying to us. Listen to me. Listen to me. Just because aliens are real, and just because these are other entities, and they're speaking to us, it does not mean that they are truthful and that they are helpful. A lot of times, I'm going to tell you this, and that's what I do, that is a part of it. They are lying to us. Uh-huh. Stephen Greer is disinformation. They are not here to help us. If they are coming and they want to be a part of our society, they're coming to destroy us. The three-body problem talks about all the time. Because we will be a threat. If they are
How
here.
How are we a threat? We're soft little puddles of water.
We're an extremely violent species.
Yeah, but but the aliens are going to be like 12 feet tall, covered in, you know, metal or whatever.
This is just if they are nuts and bolts aliens, though.
Maybe I'm thinking of the Goombas from Mario Brothers.
I'm just saying, if these are crafts from other planets and they're coming here, they're going to kill us.
Yeah.
If they're interdimensional creatures and it's something else far more nebulous, then we could maybe live together in harmony. But for the most part, I think they'll just ignore us like we ignore bugs.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I hope that's not the case. I would like maybe one's good at baseball. Mm. You mean alien sports?
Yes.
Come on, they'll drink it. They're drinking all sport.
You're heading into Men in Black territory. You're heading into the movies Men in Black territory, not the real Men in Black territory.
Okay.
And wrapping us out, the world's tallest man saves dolphin.
Special story for me?
Yeah, this is the Chinese government. They found they had to call in some extra help from Mongolian herdsman Bao Zishun, who's called in after these prize dolphins swallowed plastic used around their pool and an aquarium in Fushun, northeast China.
Oh.
They didn't know how to get the plastic out of their guts, so he had to go and take his So he is 7'9" tall.
Woo!
He had to take his 1.06 meter long arm into the mammal's stomachs. They had to wrap up their teeth with t-shirts and towels to gnaw on him. He's very humble seeming. And he had to go down to their fucking guts and pull out all this fucking plastic.
Wow.
The dolphins are doing well. And they just sent him back to wherever the fuck it is he comes from.
Oh,
afterwards.
My. Wow, he's a herdsman. That's going to hurt the back, being a herdsman, bending down 7'9", trying to whack down some bushes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was normal height until he was 16, and then he went on a gigantic, extremely painful, ooh, extremely inconvenient growth spurt.
Yikes. Is he still growing? Maybe he has gigantism. What does the guy look like?
No, he after 7 years, he stopped.
He stopped,
yeah.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
He wow. looks pretty... He looks, you know, like you'd think he looks. He's got a big head. He's kind of a little bit he looks like the tall man from Twin Peaks, kind of.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah. He's a little Mirazond, just a little bit.
George Mirazond?
Uh-huh.
All right, I hear what you're saying. That happens, you know. You can't have both worlds. You can't be super tall and super handsome. You can be super tall and not handsome, or you can be normal height and very handsome.
No, you are tall and handsome. You can't be that type because that literally requires organ failure for you to be 8 feet tall like that.
Yes. Well, he must be the tallest person in the world.
He is.
Oh, in the whole world.
Yes, in the whole world. But they're using him like a tool.
Right.
They literally went and being like I have to use Natalie to get the groceries up to the top level of the cupboards.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, that's kind of sad insight into your personal life there, but...
I like it because then she's high above me and I think it's sexy.
Uh-huh. What? So, yeah, no, there has to be some tool they could have used instead of this man's
I don't know.
Arm,
it's just there's got to be... There was somebody at the zoo that they were wondering, how do we get this plastic out of this dolphin? And then someone thought...
I know what.
Call the world's tallest man.
Tallest man. I don't know who that
is. It
was.
Is pretty cool.
I don't know who
get me Bao Zhisun.
Yeah, he is kind of a superhero, huh?
But he's got to live his life in a lot of pain, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he can't like the former world's largest man who I took a picture with in London. Uh-huh. It was a statue of him.
Yeah.
And then people said, is that your dad? Kind of fun roast mode. He couldn't feel his feet. And then he got an infection because the blood veins don't go all the way down.
Yeah. Well, it's pain receptors don't go all the way down. So so he wasn't able to feel anything. Like the pain receptors don't go all the way down. The guy had to use braces to just stand. And one night the braces got an infection. He didn't notice it until the next day. Everything swelled up. The infection went to his brain and he died.
John Travolta was going to be Forrest Gump, huh?
He was going to, Tom Hanks was the fourth person to be offered the role. They went through John Travolta, Bill Murray.
No!
And Chevy Chase.
I like Bill Murray very much. Chevy Chase as a person isn't that great, but I love Fletch and all the Vacations. But it's got to be Tom Hanks.
We know this now.
Yeah, we know this now.
But what kind of world? Is there a world where Travolta is Forrest Gump?
God, I hope so, because I want to see that movie so fucking bad.
I would have seen it in a second. I would have seen it in a second. I would have loved it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I would have loved seeing that shit.
But oh, shit. That's the thing. Didn't Forrest Gump and Pulp Fiction come out the same year?
Yes.
Yeah. So that would...
So if Tom Hanks was in Pulp Fiction and Travolta was Forrest Gump,
would have also been fantastic in
best.
That role.
As
Vincent Vega, if Tom Hanks would have been fucking great in that.
Yeah,
I could totally see
it.
It
would have been great in all of it. All of it's good, but they're all very talented. Mm-hmm. Whoever, I mean, they are just lucky the way it rolled out. They're all very lucky.
That's okay. All right. No need to get all bitter there. That was 1994. You were 12.
Yeah.
So you
Man, get me in there. I was almost in. Did I ever tell you this about how I was in 2 callbacks to be the bully in the Little Rascals movie?
No.
No.
Yeah, I was really close to being that.
You were a child actor?
Yeah, but I wouldn't suck dick like the other kids.
That's why you didn't get it. I'm sure that's why.
I'm sure.
Probably.
I'm sure.
Or did you walk in and say that to the casting producer? And they're like,
I'm not sucking dick today.
I ain't sucking dick today.
Actually, that probably would have gotten you the role as the bully in the Little Rascals, all right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening to our little side stories. Of course, we got the more factual, informative episode coming up here later on this week. Very exciting content. I'm excited to hear about this lady.
Yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with this one. Been working hard on it. It's probably going to be a two-parter. But yeah, it has been super fun to go through this story. And it is definitely it's going to be, I think... possibly the grossest murder we've ever covered.
Interesting.
On the show. Like, I think it could be the grossest. I mean, maybe the most disturbing. I mean, the only other murder that comes close to this is Richard Chase.
Richard Chase. Yeah. Like, oh, wow. Yeah, okay, yeah, we're in Chase territory.
Yeah, Richard Chase is the only, like, Richard Chase, I think, still might beat it, but on the other hand, Richard Chase was, you know, out of his mind. You know, he was crazy. This woman was, she was a...
Let's not give him too much. You
know, let's just say she was a couple of, she had a couple of kangaroos loose in her upper paddock.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Henry Zebrowski, you can find him on all the social medias and stuff. I don't know
Who gives a shit?
All right, Marcus Parks, same thing. I'm the same thing as well. And I guess that's about it. Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan.
Oh, hail Helgeen.
Oh, look at that. Oh. And if you're living, then if you're not loving and you're not laughing, you should be dying.
Oh, that's not good.